I dream of a world where a kid who has a talent and a passion can go take that to whatever level that's possible. Who am I? I would say I'm a storyteller and I'm also a performer, but I'm still figuring it out. Ascending is a 25-minute music documentary about the six South Asian artists that were at Coachella last year in 2023. We haven't historically had a voice in pop culture, in media. You can go be on stages like that, and you can make it as an artist, and you can also make whatever kind of music you want to make. You don't have to like fit this formula just because you're South Asian. You can do whatever you want, and you can highlight your culture and identity in however way you want, you know? Like, I literally joke, I'm like, this is our Delulu come Trululu. Like, I say that all the time about this because it was completely delusional.
Meghna, welcome to Brown Game Strong.
Hi, thank you for having me.
I'm so excited to chat to you.
Me too.
It's been such a good weekend attending Daldin and watching the screening.
I know. I'm so glad you came.
It's good.
Yeah, I honestly didn't know what to expect, but it was such a lovely event. Mm. And it was so cool to see all these people that I didn't know there at the event. It was really cool.
Yeah. Mm. Are you not exhausted?
I am exhausted.
Because you look it, but because you traveled all the way from America.
Yeah. No, I'm very exhausted. And I do look it. I was like, my dark circles have gotten so much worse over the past few weeks. I feel like 2024 just kind of like hit crazy for me.
Mm.
And it's like good things, but as a freelancer, it's hard because you don't know. I mean, this is my first year. I said that at Dialed In. I started freelancing beginning of April of last year. So It's almost been a year. And that first year is really hard because you're just trying to like prove that you can do it. And then, it's like, how do you say no to, you can't say no to things. Mm-hmm. Like you don't know how to, you're trying to figure out like that work-life balance. And then when things start to pick up, it's exciting, but it's like, you don't know that divide between personal time and like professional time, you know, especially when like what you do is so tied to your personal life anyways.
And who you are, mm-hmm. your identity. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. I feel that. I think the difference that I have is that for me, doing this work isn't my full-time thing. So I can't even imagine what that transition would have been like for you. Actually, a question that springs to mind immediately is, have you started picking up work that you might not have? Had you not been full-time freelance?
Yeah. Yes. Yes, for sure. For sure. I think there's a lot of work that I've picked up, projects that I've agreed to be a part of. Not that I don't do anything that I don't want to do, but like things that aren't necessarily like in my passion areas because I feel like I need the work, but I also view it all as like practice, you know, like producing something that isn't. And I mean, I also do things like all sorts of formats, all sorts of genres, a lot of stuff with artists. Like, I'm doing like, I just did a proof of concept, like comedy short, which is like completely different, but I feel like everything is good experience.
Yeah.
And so I try not to like look at it that way, but I feel like only recently I've started to say no to things because of bandwidth and like trying to really prioritize where to put my energy in because it's hard.
How does one even say no?
I don't know. It's hard.
I struggle with it all the time as well.
It's really hard. I think it's just, I hate, my biggest pet peeve is overpromising and under-delivering. Mm. So I think that's kind of like how I approach it. It's like, if I don't think I'm going to like bring my 100% and do a good job, then I'm not going to do that. Mm. And I've felt that way before where I've been like so overwhelmed and I've been like, I feel like I'm doing way too many things and I'm not giving my 100% to anything and like things are slipping through the cracks because I'm too stretched thin. And that's a horrible feeling too, you know? So I think it's just being at peace with the fact that you can't do everything all at once and you can do everything, but not all at once. Yeah. I think that's what, that's a big, that's actually a big learning lesson for, that's been a big thing that I've had to think about over the past few years.
Just be realistic, right, with what you can do. I think we've all learned it the hard way.
Yeah.
And I'm so similar in that, like, I've got my hands in just so many different pots that I'm just like, mentally, I think it keeps my, you know, chaotic brain at bay because I'm never bored.
Right.
But also it means that I have had years where I've been so stretched that like, it's almost just like, is this self-inflicted? Should I just, you know, take myself away completely and run away and, you know, go to a different country for a bit and not talk to anyone? But yeah, I think it's one of those things that you just have to figure out, right? By yourself, like no one can really tell you how to run that.
No.
But all things considered, I think you're making such an impact and you're doing amazing things.
Thank you.
And I think I resonate so much in like the different things you do. And I find often a lot of my circle and a lot of my friends are like that. And so it's normalized in my head to do so many things until somebody reminds me that actually you do know that like a lot of people just do their full-time job.
I feel the same exact way.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I've built a community in LA that's very like-minded. I mean, everyone's different and everyone is doing a different assortment of things. But yeah, I forget that we're like not normal in that way.
You know? Yes, it is not normal. I actually want to ask you about what it is you do so that people actually, you know, learn a bit more about you. So who is Meghna?
That's a great question. I am a filmmaker. I'm also a dancer and choreographer, but I have like a background in multicultural marketing, entertainment marketing. So I feel like I still do that all the time. I'm like always marketing my own stuff and things that I'm passionate about. And I still work with an organization in that space. So I feel like it's hard to say, to find like that common thread of like, what, who am I? I would say I'm a storyteller and I'm also a performer. And I'm a storyteller in like the various ways that takes shape, but I'm still figuring it out. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. You said that on stage, during your Q&A after the screening of your documentary. And it really struck me when you said that you are a storyteller in all the different forms, because ultimately that's the thing that threads through every single thing that you do. And I think that's really powerful because that's almost like it's never ending. You can always find new avenues in which to tell stories and find more passions to live that through, you know? Yeah. I think that's really cool because it kind of goes against the grain of what we're told as, you know, when we're growing up, is that who are you going to be? Are you going to be a doctor? Are you going to be a business person? And I think we're so like, now we're in that process of trying to, I don't know, almost like see it differently of like, what's my passion? But dance can be a passion, but you have passions beyond just like the means, right? So I think that's cool.
Yeah, that's actually such an interesting point. I've thought about this a lot recently where I feel like kids should not be asked, what do you want to do when you grow up? I think it should be more like, what do you want to do with your life? Or at least I feel like that question would have helped me, because I didn't know how to pick a career or how to think about what I wanted to be or what I wanted to do from like a 9-to-5 weekly basis. I think it was just like I had all these things that I was excited about, all these different passions, and I didn't know what that meant, but I knew I wanted to like be a part of creating that in some way. And I like literally even wrote about this in like my college essays. I was like, I just want a life where I can do all of these things and find the ways in which they intersect. But I don't know how to just like pick one career, you know, or I don't even know what that career is. And I think for me, it's always been like, yeah, what do I want to do with my life? What do I want to accomplish? What do I want to create? I think like that's been my journey. And I think like I have a little brother. I ask him those questions, like younger kids that I'm with. And it's interesting. It's hard to like think about how to foster that kind of conversation with young kids when they're growing up, you know, but I feel like that would have helped me because it was a long journey for me to come to this place for sure. Yeah.
Also, because kids nowadays, I feel, have such a different, they have such a different narrative placed on them. There's a lot more emphasis on creativity and trying out different things and, you know, like not being defined by one single thing.
Right.
Because I think I know I can look back at myself and I know that I placed my value on these very concrete things, like doing a degree in science, for example, for me was like, okay, that's my benchmark of success. If I don't do that, then, you know, I've probably picked a degree that's not, you know, impressive enough for my parents to talk about or be happy about. I don't know. It's like little things.
No, I relate
like that,
to that. Yeah.
Right. And now it's just like, oh, I would have saved myself a lot of maybe grief and just effort on my part if I had just accepted that it's okay to try different things. But also at the time, that was not normal or it was not impressive.
Yeah, it was a different time. I think same for me. Both my parents are engineers and are like settled in the Silicon Valley and met in engineering school and were like, wanted me to be, like if you met 5-year-old me and asked me what I wanted to be when I grow up, I would be like, I want to go to Stanford and be an engineer. Like that was just like ingrained in me. And so it was a really big battle to over the years to feel like this was like a viable career path and that it's not a waste of intelligence. That's actually a really big point, is I felt like there was this hierarchy of what people valued within our community, and the arts were like what people did if they were not smart enough for math and science, which I think is ridiculous. I think you have to be very smart and capable in a different way to make it in the arts and to just create good art, you know? But that was like a lot of unlearning that I had to do.
Yeah, and not just a waste of intelligence, but actually a lack of intelligence, right? Which is the perception.
Yes, that's, yeah, both, yeah.
But I think young 5-year-old Meghna, who wanted to be an engineer, was she also creative?
Yes.
What did she do?
She didn't actually want to be an engineer. She was, 5-year-old me, I feel like I was very theatrical. And I feel like, I was very theatrical. I danced. I started dancing when I was like 4 years old. I also sang a lot growing up. My first dream was to be a pop star.
Wow.
Yeah.
Who did you look up to?
Oh my God. It was like Britney Spears and Shreya Ghoshal.
Love that.
It was
both. That was me as well.
Yeah. And I'm half Bengali. And when I found out that Shreya Ghoshal was Bengali and her first, you know, like she did Devdas and Jism when she was like 17, I was like, she was my idol. But then at the same time, I loved like all the American pop stars too. And I always loved both. Like I always loved both. I always loved Hollywood and Bollywood. I always loved like the Western music scene and, you know, South Asian music. I always loved everything. Even in dance, like I did Bharatanatyam, later did some Kathak, always did like Bollywood. But then I also loved like Western dance styles. I feel like that's very common for like diaspora kids to have that experience. But anyways, yeah, I wanted to be a pop star when I was 5 years old. And I also loved reading. Actually, I don't know if that was true when I was 5. I'm just thinking about me as a kid.
Young Meghna.
As a kid. Yeah, no, I loved reading. I remember having like these two really close friends when I was like in kindergarten or first grade, and they were not friends with each other, but I was just like so like determined to have the three of us be best friends. And I remember like having this like vision of writing a book about like the three of us being best friends, even though like they weren't even friends with each other. Like I was just always like very like dreamy and theatrical.
Or Delulu, like they would
Delulu.
Say.
I was very Delulu. I was very dreamy. Mm. I've always been very dreamy. And when I was in middle school, high school, I was very dreamy. I was like journaling and like writing. I would write songs. I was very angsty mm-hmm. when I hit eighth grade. I was very angsty. It's actually really funny. And I was always writing like songs and poetry. And
I was going to say, did you go through that emo phase we all went through when we were teenagers?
So I didn't go through an externally emo phase. Like yeah. You would have never guessed I was emo, but internally I was very emo. Yeah. I was like very, very angsty Pisces kid. Yeah. I was definitely difficult for my parents. I think they just didn't understand me, you know? But yeah, overall, I was very dreamy. And then I always loved performing. When I was in high school, I was like super into journalism and like yearbook and all my like language arts classes. And I think that was the point where I was like, my parents were like, oh, she doesn't want to do math and science. What's going to happen?
Oh, you know? No.
And then? But I was never... I never thought about film. Mm. I loved movies. I loved entertainment. My parents also love movies. My dad, like every time I go home to visit my parents and I'm like, let's watch this movie. He's like, I've already seen it. Like he watches everything. But it's so funny because he never wanted me to like go into that field. But like, it's such a big part of his life, you know, and both of my parents. And my mom is speaks Tamil. My dad speaks Bengali. They speak different languages. But I feel like the common, like they always just like watched global movies together.
Mm.
And Hollywood, Bollywood, regional cinema, everything. And they don't even like Kuch Kuch Hota Hai Kabhi, Kushi Kabhi Gum. Like they didn't like cheesy Bollywood movies. Like I liked them better than they did, but they always loved like thrillers and dramas and crime dramas, and like they all honestly introduced me to everything. But I never even thought about it as a possibility until I went to college.
Okay.
Yeah, like never. What, not even once.
What changed for you once you went to college?
I went to college. I was a business major at USC. I really wanted to do journalism. My dream school was Northwestern School of Journalism. I didn't get in. And everywhere else I applied for like business because that was the compromise with my parents. But, you know, if it wasn't going to be like engineering or medicine, then or law, then it would be business. And so I did business. I had a scholarship through the business school. So I couldn't have switched out of my major. But luckily I went to USC and it's a very interdisciplinary education. Mm-hmm. So I took like so many classes in different schools. Like I took documentary classes. I took like media and social change, screenwriting. I think a lot of it is being exposed in a way that makes you realize it's possible.
Right.
And that was huge because I didn't see that at all before. So I think that sort of exposure that I got through USC that cultivated that like storytelling or like the media storytelling that I wanted to do. And then also when I went to USC, I was very determined to dance in LA. I joined my college dance team. I had a fun time, but I wasn't like fulfilled as a performer. So then I joined like Joya Kazi's company in LA when I was like 19. And that was like a huge, like, that was very transformative for me because that was the first time I like stepped out of college and like I was the youngest. Everyone else was like professional dancers in LA who were also actors and in entertainment in some other capacity. Some people were filmmakers. A lot of women of color. Not that many South Asian women when I joined, even though it was a Bollywood dance company, which is crazy. because a lot of South Asian women, at least back then, didn't do dance in that way. Mm. But I think that exposed me again to more people who were doing things that I wanted to do. Mm. And I was on set. I did like a lot of productions and shows. I think I also just like learned what it's like to work in entertainment. Like there was a time like when I was auditioning for the company where I I like slept through a call that I was supposed to do with her. And it was at 11 a.m. Like, yeah. I shouldn't have slept through an 11 a.m. call, but I was like a 19-year-old college kid. But then she like had this whole conversation with me where she was like, you need to treat like rehearsals like meetings, and like calls with, even if it's in the dance space, as you would like something that's, academic or like an office job. You know what I mean? It's, you have to give it that same sort of value and importance and respect, because for other people in this company, this is their full time. Mm. This is what they do. They are full time creatives. And it was just this whole conversation that like, I think just really like lit a fire under me, that I was like, if I want to do something like this, I need to apply that level of like discipline and professionalism to this field. And I didn't want to be a full-time dancer, but there was so many other things that I was exposed to within like the creative field and production and choreography and all of that, that I think just again led me to realize that I wanted to lean into a career in that space.
Mm. I know you've obviously got this huge sort of dance side to you, and you've said a couple of times that you didn't see yourself as a full-time dancer. There were times where you weren't fulfilled while doing that. What do you feel was it about dance that wasn't fulfilling you or your soul enough?
That's a great question. I think a lot of times when I was on dance teams, and I also did like a Broadway workshop, I've been very blessed with like the dance opportunities I've had. And it's been I love being on stage. I love performing. But I think I've always been like itching to be on the other side, like itching to be the choreographer or to at least like the creative director. And I'm like not somebody who like thinks I need to do everything on my own. I'm not like, oh my God, I want to be the choreographer instead of that person. Like, I think I love creative collaboration and the team. It's just that I was like excited about what they were doing and wanted to like help or be in that, be with them, be on their team. And like, even when I did the Broadway workshop, I was like, it was fun. I learned so much, but like, I was like, I don't want to be performing the same thing every single day. Like, I don't know if that's going to be fulfilling for me, but it would be so fulfilling to be like on the creative team, like working with these performers and like bringing the vision to life. Like, I think I've just always been more excited by that, the other side, especially long term. I think like, again, I was like, I want to dance as much as I can while I can dance. Mm-hmm. But I think like, I want to be like 70, 80 years old and still like directing dancers or performers or actors or whatever it is. So I think that's one of the things. I also think there's this framework that I've thought about. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's called Head, Heart, Hustle.
It rings a bell, but I don't know it.
It's like a Venn diagram. Head, heart, hustle.
Okay.
Head is what you're really naturally good at.
Mm-hmm.
Heart is what you love and have a passion for. Hustle is what you have the drive for. And that intersection is kind of like what would make sense for you to do career-wise.
Mm.
And for me, I've thought about that a lot. Like, dance is something that I have, at least as a performer, as a dancer, I have the passion for it. I love it. I would say I've trained and like developed certain skills. I'm not the best dancer in the world, but like I'm not a bad dancer. But I don't have the hustle also for what it takes to be like a full-time professional dancer that's like auditioning and like booking jobs all the time and is on the go in that way. Like, I have so much respect for dancers who do that, but I was like, that's not what I have the hustle for. And I do have the hustle just in general, but not for that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now things have changed. Opportunities have changed for dancers with social media, which I think is awesome. But even in that space, like I would, like I feel like dance is something that I love being able to monetize off of it. I love doing jobs as a dancer, but just I also don't want to put the pressure of it being like my full-time source of income. I think that'll take the fun, like the fun and soul and joy away from it. I just did my MFA in producing at USC, and one of the things that the chair of the program, his name is Ed Saxon, he did Silence of the Lambs, which is crazy. Yeah. But I did a meeting with him once, I mean, multiple times. One time he said something very, very impactful, where he was like, this career in TV and film is very, very fickle and a lot of ups and downs. You can't rely on anything. You never know what's going to happen. And obviously, you're going to keep trying and keep doing what you're doing. But it's really, really important that you have a source of joy that is consistent outside of your career, which a lot of people don't think about. A lot of people don't have. Like, they're just so obsessed with, like, everything they do in filmmaking, right? And that's why it gets really hard for people. But I think, for me, that source of joy, that consistent source of joy, is dance. Like, that's something that no one can really like take away from me. I can dance and create and perform any way I want to. Like, I have my dance community that is so strong. It's one of those things where I'm like, oh, for the rest of my life, no matter what happens, I will hear music and be inspired to it and be able to dance.
Yeah.
You know? And that's all that I want to, you know, I want to preserve that.
Yeah, I couldn't relate to that more. I think dance has done exactly the same for me, because I've had times where I've got friends who've kind of seen that I've been dancing a lot over the years who aren't dancers themselves. And I've had people ask me, you know, would you pursue this further? Would you start something? Would you teach? And it's funny, because the longer I am in this space doing this, the more I realize that I don't want to pursue it in that sense, or I don't want to open up this other realm.
Yeah.
Because actually what dance does bring me is, like you said, like the ability to creatively express, but also to grow in a space, to develop in something where I don't have an agenda. Yeah. Like, I'm not necessarily trying to make a livelihood out of it. Mm-hmm. You could make money out of it. I've made money out of it before through just you know, opportunities like randomly that have come about, but that's all been fun. And there's
like
never
an
been
extra. Yeah.
It's just a fun bonus thing. Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm getting paid for this. Cool.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, there are other avenues that I feel like, okay, yeah, this is something that I could really pursue a bit more seriously, or, you know, try and establish like a brand around this. So I find it so true that not enough people think about having that hobby or passion that actually you can grow and develop in and express creatively without anything more.
That's so true.
Right?
Yeah. I think I used to think, like when I was in college and I was like, okay, I'm going to do this switch. I'm going to go pursue entertainment. And it was like all this pressure of like, okay, how am I going to make this work? And then I became fixated on what I'd heard from other people, which is like passion to paycheck.
Oh, God.
And now I'm like really letting go of that. It's so exhausting. And for me, dance has become more than just a hobby. But it's not my full time. Like, I'm like, it's in this like in between space, which I'm happy for and grateful for, because I do have bigger dreams to blend dance with film and TV. And I love choreography. Like, I would love more gigs as a choreographer, and I am working on a lot of cool choreography projects right now. But I love that it's not my full time source of income, because that's really hard. But you're right, because dance has become more than that, I have had to think about like, what are my passions that are not that at all. And I feel like that's like singing for me, because I said I sang when I was younger, and like, I don't sing publicly, like I don't post myself on like TikTok in that way, but and people have like asked me, but I'm like, no, this is just like something I have for myself right now, you know?
Yeah. You have to preserve some element of yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's amazing. I didn't know you sang. That's so exciting.
Yeah.
And good for you for keeping things closer to your chest just for your own sanity, because I feel like, given that you you have such a kind of busy, hectic at times life.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk about more of the stuff that you've been doing, but I think you do need that, you of all people, and people who do kind of put a lot of themselves out there, which I think I've had lots of discussions with guests on here about what it's like being out there on social media and how do you protect your energy and, you know, loads of those. We could sit here for ages talking about that. But all I'm going to say is, like, it makes me really happy that you're aware of that and that you're like, yeah, like you have something that keeps you fueled. But I actually want to talk about your documentary now, Ascending. So could you tell me what Ascending is?
Yes. Ascending is a 25-minute music documentary about the 6 South Asian artists that were at Coachella last year in 2023. And the entire documentary really takes place at the festival over the course of 2 weekends. And we made it. Zoe Malhotra, who is an amazing filmmaker, and my co-director on the project, the two of us really worked on everything together, and we worked on it with Golden Voice, which, for people who don't know, it's the big music promoter brand and company that's behind Coachella, Stagecoach, so many other music venues and concerts. Like, they're a huge force behind the scenes in the music music industry. They produced it with us, and it's available on Coachella's YouTube platform. It's really exciting because it's the first time that they've ever done anything like that before.
Mm.
And it's something I'm still processing of like how we, like, I literally joke, I'm like, this is our Delulu come Trululu. Like, I say that all the time about this because it was completely delusional when we were like, let's go do this. It was so delusional.
Okay, please can you walk me through, firstly, why this was the story you wanted to tell?
Yeah.
And secondly, what did you do to actually get Golden Voice to come on board to the project? How did you actually navigate all of this?
Yeah. It's so interesting because I was working in narrative feature film development. And that's, like, always been my goal, is like, I want to make feature films, scripted feature films. But I've also done a lot of music videos and a lot of work with artists, also being a dancer and being connected to that space. I also love music videos. I worked with this director, Hannah Lux Davis, who did like Thank You Next and Seven Rings and stuff. And I worked with her on a Charlie XCX video, actually. That's how I first met like Charlie's team and stuff. But anyways, I've always had like those two things, music videos and then like narrative feature film. I'm not even into like episodic TV. I think I like limited series and stuff. So, and I never thought about documentary. I love documentary, but I never thought that I would make documentary. But it's so funny because I feel like through this whole process, I'm realizing that that's actually something I've always wanted to do. Like, that's why when I was in high school and I wanted to do journalism, my parents were like, what do you want to do? Do you want to be a writer? Do you want to be a reporter? And I was like, no, I think I want to do like video journalism. Like, I was like having all of these ideas that really was like, you know, storytelling through documentary. But anyways, I never thought I would do documentary. And I think this experience has been like proof of the fact that for me, it's not about the format and the genre. It's just like, if I think there's a cool story and I want to bring it to life, what is the best way to tell that story? And for this, it was obviously a doc. And I loved the process of working on a doc. And I want to do so many more docs now. But anyways, I think for me, I told you that my parents are like different from different parts of South Asia. I grew up in a very vibrant South Asian community in the Bay Area. And a lot of people were like doing the arts and stuff as like hobbies and passions, although no one really like pursued it full time. I mean, there are obviously some people, but I think I was just exposed to so much culture through music. And even though I was like going to school with so many like South Asian kids, there wasn't as much of a I mean, it's, this is like the stereotype, but a lot of people were like embarrassed of their culture and their heritage and of their parents, of their home life. Like, it's really sad. And I always wondered why, like, even I did go through a period of time where I felt like I had two worlds. I was never like, I never shunned like the stuff that I engaged with within my community. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, I was a hardcore Bharatanatyam dancer. Like, I never shunned any of that, but I kept it very separate from my life at school and like all of that. And my friends who I felt like wouldn't understand it. Like, it was, and I like, you know, I didn't have my friends over at my house all the time. Like, there was definitely like this like separation and a lot of like weird feelings of inferiority compared to white people, honestly. Like, America's a melt, it's not really a melting pot, it's like a salad bowl. You know, it's very like, it, there isn't as much of like an amalgamation of cultures and languages and all of that. It's, and like, you know, South Asians in America are the model minority, and they have this place in and have earned respect and status within specific careers and within the STEM industry. Like, all, so many CEOs in, of tech companies in America are Indian. But because of that model minority stereotype, that also means that we're the silent minority. And that's true for Asian Americans too, like the larger Asian American population, which is like, we haven't historically had a voice in pop culture, in media, in politics. We're just like the obedient immigrant population that's like contributing to these like tech companies and our economy in that way. You know what I mean?
So true.
But there's not like a voice in pop culture, and like people don't get angry as loudly either. It's starting to change. Like, I don't know if you know about like the Not to Not Do thing at the Oscars last year. Like,
I do.
Which was really frustrating.
It was.
It was insane. Like, if that had happened, like it was essentially brownwashing.
So could you explain for people who might not know?
Yeah, so the Not Do Not Do was nominated for an Oscar, the song from RRR, which is huge, and they did a performance at the Oscars. Not a single South Asian person was on stage performing. They kind of justified that being like, oh, in the movie, it's like colonizers, right? It's the two Indian dancers, and then they're dancing with the white colonizers. But the fact that the white colonizers on stage were you know, represented people from different ethnic groups that were not white, but there were still no South Asians, like, what? That's not a fair justification. Also, regardless of the background dancers, the two main leads who are playing Indian characters were basically just like Indian passing men. And they did a great job. Like, I'm not trying to take away from like their skill, but it was like, it's one of those moments where you feel like the South Asians in America are kind of invisible. And they don't think that anyone's going to speak up or cause a ruckus. And then we did. And it's only because of that, that like there were articles that came out that, you know, the president of the Academy found out, and like the choreographers issued an apology, and, you know, people realize like this is not okay. But I think it's because historically, like, South Asians haven't had that like voice in pop culture and media. I was thinking all of these things for so many years of my life, and I was like, I don't want like young brown kids in America to grow up feeling ashamed. I don't want any kid to grow up feeling ashamed. How do you change that? And I think media shapes how we perceive ourselves and how we perceive each other. And I think that's like been why I've wanted to go into this space, is to affect that change. And to, like I said this at Dialed In too, but it's really, really all rooted in like making a better world for like future generations. And I was also wondering, like, why is it that even though I had this phase of my life where I had two worlds, I still felt so much pride in being South Asian, even though like I don't speak an Indian language, I like feel very confused. I'm like very much an ABCD. I'm like very much an American born confused Desi. Like I had a nanny who spoke Gujarati. My mom speaks Tamil, but like her family's in Bangalore. And when I go to India, I'm like, I hear Kannada. And then my dad speaks Bengali, but his family is in Mumbai. And like, I had a nanny who spoke Gujarati, then I had another nanny who spoke Punjabi, and like I was just like all over the place. Like I did like Bharatanatyam, then I did Hindustani music, like, but that really gave me an appreciation for South Asian culture as a whole and all the nuances within it and like everything about it. And I realized that the reason why I felt so much pride and excitement and joy is rooted in the arts and music. Very specifically music, even dance. So much of why I love dance is because of music, you know?
Yeah.
And I think music spreads that joy. And I said this at Dialed In too, like I don't understand the language, but I have always loved it. And people are always like so shocked when they're like, you don't know what this means? Like you're dancing to these songs. You don't know what they mean. You've sang these songs. You don't know what they mean. And I'm like, I don't. I mean, I look up the lyrics, but like, I don't know what they mean, but I still feel so connected and like, I still love it so much. And that goes for like global music in general. Like, I love music in so many different languages. So I've just been like, you know, thinking a lot about how like South Asian music is and South Asian art is like a huge way in which we as South Asian people connect with each other. And in the diaspora, it's how we're so connected. Like, it's so cool that you, like, South Asian people all over the world are listening to the same music and have the same memories that are rooted in music.
Yeah.
And so many of our movies are rooted in music. And, like, it's just a big part of storytelling in general. Like, they say that in, people have always said, like, Bollywood movies and American musicals are, like, long-lost lovers. Which I actually don't think they're that similar. I think in American musicals, the songs, the lyrics are essential to the plot. Like they drive the plot forward. Versus in Bollywood musicals, the songs drive the emotion forward.
Yeah.
They're like completely separate from the plot sometimes. And some people think it's like unnecessary and like completely random. But I feel like a lot of times it is so necessary because it's about the emotion of like what you're watching in that moment or what's happening in the story. And that's why when we listen to these songs, we're like emotional and nostalgic because it reminds us of that feeling and of that story. So anyways, I just think music is a huge part of like our culture and the ways in which we feel connected and feel joy and pride. And I am very passionate in general about elevating that as much as possible, because I think that will be how we bridge communities together and bridge peace. And like, I used to be embarrassed when like my iPod would like switch to like Indian music.
Oh my God, me too.
Yeah. I remember I did like I went on a trip to China as a part of my business program my freshman year. And I like was like discreetly listening to Bollywood music on my iPod, and then I like fell asleep, and then my friend next to me, like when I woke up, was like, what are you listening to? Because she was like looking at my phone, and I was so embarrassed. And that was like in college, and before that it was so much worse too. But I was like, this is so stupid. People should just like listen to what they want to listen to and like and make music however they want. And anyways, going back to Ascending, I think when the lineup came out, Zoe and I felt very similarly. Like she has a hybrid identity too. She's found a lot of like joy and pride in her culture and her identity through music and art. We actually connected because she was working on a documentary about dancers, and like someone introduced us because they were like, oh, Meghna's a dancer but also a filmmaker. And so we just had a lot of like synergy in terms of like the stories we were trying to tell about community and culture that are rooted in like the performance arts. And the lineup came out and we were just like, this is crazy. Like I said, we went to USC.
Yeah.
Coachella was such a big deal when we were in college, and I didn't think Coachella was, and I'd been before, but I didn't think that it was like a place for me.
Mm.
I always kind of just like was like, it's all like the, it's all, you know, it's just like all the people that I knew that were going, like I just, what I'd seen from it online, I just felt like it wasn't about what I wanted it to be about.
Yeah.
Which is not true. I think it's just like when there's like a dominant narrative.
Yeah.
And then there's all these, the perception builds. And so I was like, oh my God, this is going to be so cool. Not in terms of, not only in terms of like the representation of seeing these artists on stage, but the fact that so many more South Asian people are going to come out to Coachella.
Mm.
And like, we wanted to like, we were like so excited about that. And just the range of the artists was really inspiring in terms of scale, in terms of diversity. Genre, diversity, region, religion. Some were like native to their countries. Some were diaspora artists. Some had been to Coachella before. Some were like first time. Some, you know, Diljit sings only in Punjabi. Then there were electronic artists. Joy Crooks, who's amazing. Jay Paul, like Ali Sethi. Like, it's just, it was crazy. And then obviously Charlie XCX, who many people didn't even know that she's half Indian. But I think that's like the beauty of it, is that this is like the range of South Asian identities that can exist and that does exist. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be a really exciting moment, and it means a lot to people. We already knew that it was meaning a lot to people because it was blowing up on our social media. I used to work in multicultural marketing and PR. So I'm like always reading and following outlets, and I'm always like doing a lot of social listening. And I think that's where I get really excited. That's also why I like social media, actually, is because I like to see what people are saying and discussing and talking about.
How they're reacting.
Mm. And I think that it was clear that this was like special and exciting. And so we were like, I think there's a story here. And I think also South Asian artists or South Asian people can be very individual and competitive. And I think we thought there was going to be a beauty about telling like a collective story where we're still highlighting individuals, but they're a part of this collective story about South Asian art. And it was challenging because we were like, we don't want it to just be like this fluffy representation piece. We want there to be like those nuances and layers and like, you know, highlighting the whole community behind what it's like to bring a lineup like this to life.
Mm.
And we just wanted to go to Coachella and capture that joy and excitement, because when you watch that, you feel it and you realize like, this is super special. Another part of it is that when the lineup came out, I had some people that I know who, non-South Asian, who reacted kind of like negatively to the lineup because they didn't recognize a lot of names compared to before.
Yeah.
And they're like, this is the worst lineup. This lineup sucks. Like, like, who's even going to go to Coachella this year? And that was like, no, like, this lineup means a lot to people. People who didn't like previous lineups, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And there are going to be so many new people going to Coachella this year because of it.
Mm.
Not just because of the South Asian artists. There were so many international artists in general. So I think like that also lit a fire under me. I was like, no, this is special. We need to capture it. And we need to showcase what it means. Yeah.
Did you at any point feel like you were crumbling under the responsibility almost that you had to showcase this story in the right way? Because you and Zoe were the first people to do it at Coachella, and it's such a massive platform in America to do it. Did you realize that, oh my gosh, like this is a lot for me?
Yes. We were operating in like survival mode before the festival, where we were like, if we don't pitch this and get it and figure it out, then it's just, the moment is going to pass. It's not going to happen. So in the weeks leading up to Coachella, we were just like figuring out how to go and do it. And like, we were pitching to them. We were like, they had never done anything before, but they were like, let's go do it and let's go figure it out together. And we had to trust them, and we're grateful they trusted us.
Mm.
And we didn't even know, like, we were really concerned about accessing all the artists in some way or the other.
Yeah.
Making sure we get like good fan interviews and community interviews, the journalist voice, like we were like more concerned about like getting the coverage we needed. Also, I just want to say those 2 weekends were like the best, some of the best weekends of my life. Like that was, it was so much fun. And it was like proof in what my parents told me was not possible growing up, which is like, you can only have fun like one weekend. A month or something.
God,
like
yeah, you cannot be going out 2 days.
No, exactly. And also that like work and play are so separate.
Yeah,
which I was like, no, those 2 weekends, it was work and play all in one, and that's, I love it. Like I love play. Mm-hmm. You know, and I feel like that's, I'm so lucky that that was like a job for me to go do that. It was incredible. It was so fun. And it was so fun to capture the fun that people were having. After we filmed, we were like, oh shit. Okay, we have all this stuff. Now we have to make something good.
Yeah.
So we did. And then yeah, we were just like in it. We realized like the responsibility and the pressure. And I think we just had like, we were very aligned creatively. And I think we were so passionate about what we were trying to say that I don't think we ever felt directionless at all, but I do think we were like sometimes, yeah, we were like worried about pleasing all these different parties. Also coming from multicultural marketing, I know how critical people can be. And like, it's funny because I do get really anxious about stuff I put out there and I do get doubtful, but I feel like with this, we were just like genuinely proud of what we were saying within the constraints that we had.
Yeah.
And obviously, there were a lot of conversations of like, oh, we wish we could go deeper. We wish we could go deeper into their character journeys. And we even had conversations with like agents and filmmakers that we showed it to that were like, we wish it went deeper. And we were like, oh, yeah, we wish. But then we had a moment where we were like, but that's a different story. Like, this isn't about like the artist's journeys. This is about the moment at Coachella. And that's its own story. Mm-hmm. That's its own film. And we want to tell deeper stories that are artist specific, but that's separate. That's different. Mm. So we did have like an up and down experience of trying to like feel confident in the narrative that we were crafting. But I think overall, like all the choices, it started to like fall into place. And like what I said also is like, we didn't have interviews with everyone, but it worked because, and obviously we wish we had interviews with everyone, but it worked because it was like, I love Jay Paul, but he doesn't do media. He doesn't do interviews. He doesn't do press. And that's great. That's him, you know? This is what we were able to do and we're proud of it. So, and we hope it's a starting point. I think that's the thing. It's like nothing is going to be the perfect representative piece.
Yeah.
We just want this to inspire more storytelling rooted in like music and culture.
I feel like that right now where we are, there's so much more representation in the media. You know, there's so many, if you look at like TV shows and movies that are coming out, it's not just about a South Asian person being South Asian very overtly and that's their entire character. Mm-hmm, like there's so much more to it. One Day was a perfect example of that. There was this quote that really struck me that Joy said, which was not feeling the need to speak on behalf of our people, but instead just do. And she also mentioned that what happens when you become a big artist is that you then become the pilot rather than the passenger, and that's too much.
The load,
The load of that, exactly, where she just wants to represent herself. I thought that was very interesting because I think what a lot of us, maybe outside of our community, but also within the community, fall into at times is tokenism. So it's this thing, like you said, of being the documentary for South Asians in Coachella is not like the aim in life.
No.
It's a starting point. It's the breadth you've covered. Mm-hmm. You now can go deeper. You can explore more stories, more journeys, different communities, sub communities.
Yeah.
I liked that even though there was so much breadth in your documentary, you portrayed that nuance somehow, like really well still. You were still very aware that, you know, there was all these different, let's say sub communities within the South Asian diaspora that were being represented, the Bengalis, you know, those three ladies that were talking about
like the Bengali representation through Jay and Joy. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it was actually really cool to see that there was that awareness, because I think more people need to become more aware of that.
I agree. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And we're getting there. But what I found also, you know, I really loved this like weird dichotomy about the fact that you did a documentary about Coachella and South Asians and Coachella was when I started Brown Game Strong. I remember at the time there was so many, it was like, I guess when I was doing a lot more social media stuff, this was during lockdown, and there was so many memes and everything about how Coachella appropriates our culture, you know? and the thing that you were saying about going to Coachella and not feeling like you belonged there, like you could have gone, but you were not celebrated there in that same way.
Yeah.
And beyond that, I think it was actually like, maybe if you looked hard enough, people were wearing bindis and things where they didn't understand what they were doing. And part of me like thought that was a bit extreme, to be honest, that narrative, because I was like, I think it's pretty cool that they're wearing bindis, like mm-hmm. go them, mm-hmm, you know? Mm-hmm. But then I do understand the appropriation angle of it as well. So
yeah.
I don't know, like, how did you ever think at that point when you were making this documentary that you're actually changing that narrative, or that narrative has now changed as of pretty much this last lineup?
Yes, 100%. I think those were a lot of conversations I had in college about appropriation and about people that we knew that were like headdresses and bindis and this and that. And what is that line between appropriation and appreciation?
Mm.
And I think that cultural appreciation is very different from cultural appropriation. And I think it goes back to what we were saying, what I was saying earlier, which is that there's like this co-opting of culture without, if there's a co-opting of culture without appreciating and recognizing the and celebrating the people of that culture, that's when it feels like appropriation. You know what I mean? And I think that's been like the experience for a lot of South Asians in America, is like not feeling, like feeling less than.
Yeah.
Feeling othered. Feeling feeling othered, like an Indian girl wearing a bindi is uncool and too traditional. But like a white girl wearing a bindi is cool and aesthetic. I think that's the problem.
Mm.
So I think it's about really just like centering and celebrating people of that culture. And then I love cultural appreciation. Like I had like a Diwali party last year and I dressed all my friends in like my clothes and like, but that's different. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like that line. And like, those are conversations I've had so much with so many people. And that is something we thought about with this, is like exactly, it's like we wanted to film South Asian fans at Coachella, and we wanted to showcase non-South Asian fans experiencing South Asian artists and music. We wanted to like showcase what that's like when there's like that true amalgamation of culture and that true centering and celebration of people within a community that feel ignored and othered otherwise, you know?
Yeah. What has the response been?
I'm like, I don't know. I'm still processing it. It's been good. It's been amazing, honestly. I feel like it has resonated with a lot of people. Like mm-hmm. I've gotten so many messages. What was really important to us were that the artists were happy with it, and all of them were happy with it. All of their teams were happy with it. That feels very special. Again, we were nervous about creating this collective story. We were like, are they all going to want to be a part of this documentary with sharing the space with other artists? And the fact that they were like down and open to do that was amazing. I told you Joy Crooks and Jay Paul came to the screening, which was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And Jay Paul sent me like a really sweet message after, which is so nice. And, you know, Jay Wolf, like Ali Sethi, they all have been so like excited about and think that that matters so much, because they're the root of the story, right?
Mm.
So in that perspective, that has been really nice and fulfilling. And then I think our Golden Voice team is very happy with it, which is great. Like they are like excited to showcase Coachella in the way that they want Coachella to be seen, which is about the celebration of music and art and culture now. And it is evolving to like reflect a more international audience. And I think beyond that, yeah, I think so many people have appreciated and resonated with it. And obviously there's like opinions here and there, but I think overall it's been very, very positive. Mm. And I think for us, it's just been exciting because it's also going to like set us on to a path of telling more like culture driven stories and artist driven stories. And
You know, when I was watching the documentary during the screening, I found myself tearing up and I cried during it. And I know the moment.
Which part? Yeah.
The moment that got me was when Diljit came on and he just kind of looks at the camera and he just goes like, "We're here." And he says it in Punjabi, like Aage or something.
Yeah. Punjabi, Aage, Gujjala.
Something like that. And then I also, I think it like my emotions got even deeper when I saw that all the dancers were there and they were like, you know, this is huge for us. And they were kind of really expressing what a moment this is, what a cultural moment. Like, I think to me, it meant a lot because growing up in Spain, like I didn't have a massive Desi community around me. We were a very small, tight-knit community that met up once a year during the volleyball. And that would be the only time like we would remember that we were all Indian and we'd wear like lehengas and stuff. To then coming to the UK for me like 12-ish years ago and realizing that there's so much of the experience that I went through, thinking that I was weird for going through it and all of these things, like very similar to what you were talking about, was suddenly normalized. And, you know, I made a bunch of friends who'd kind of got me without even me having to explain that to them. But I, similar to you, grew up watching Britney Spears on TV, you know, watching Christina Aguilera and like I could not, or J-Lo. And I just looked at them and I was like, well, that's not me. Or Nicole Scherzinger, big fan, Pussycat Dolls when I was growing up. And to then see this, it was like a part of my child, like inner child, just like healed watching it because I was like, there's Diljit like wearing his full-on outfit, you know, talking in Punjabi, not talking in English, not really like trying to be anything that he isn't. And he's good like for that, isn't he? Because he's so,
that's so special about him. Yeah, is he is very rooted and traditional and he does only speak in Punjabi. And that hasn't stopped him from like transcending borders and
being relatable as well.
Being relatable and blowing up Coachella's live stream in numbers. For a very like authentic performance to see Bhangra dancers on stage.
That, I mean, I have been a Bhangra dancer myself. I performed and competed here in university in the UK. And like, again, that was humongous. It was like, wow, they've made it to Coachella. And I think the other moment was also when I saw Ali Sethi and Rajakumari holding hands.
I know, that gets me.
That was a moment. And I know because I've interviewed Rajakumari and I know that she's really... she's gone through a whole journey herself with like what representation means and what she represents as an artist, right? In our diaspora, going from being very like focused on that diaspora experience to then going to India and like being very Indian and then now trying to go back into the into America. And it's like watching that moment with Ali Sethi, I was just like, wow, do you feel like through these sort of moments, do you think it actually can cause a shift in the way that we look at the political sphere, for example? Because there's so, I mean, there's so much going on back in our homelands, but like this, do you think this is significant?
I hope so. I really hope so. I think my parents' generation, my grandparents' generation, they feel differently about community than my generation does. Like, I feel community with South Asians across any South Asian country, across any religion. I don't know if you've also heard of the term third culture.
Yes.
I love that term. But I feel like we are kind of like this new culture, and it's a different mindset and perspective, but it makes so much sense. Like, there's so much similarities in our culture and in the ways that we celebrate our culture, and we all listen to the same music, the same artists. And I really do think music and art transcends borders and religion and everything. Like, I really do. And like, that's why it was so special, important for us to include that moment it was like 2 seconds, but I was like, and there was also that sign that Seema was holding up in the crowd.
Yeah.
Of, it was like, I forget exactly what it said. Something about unity about, and yeah. like, you know, we can't be divided, right?
Mm.
And I think that music, art, are ways to unite people.
Mm.
We didn't want to like make it so overtly political, but we were hoping that like that nuance was there. That it is, yeah, that is a big part of why we were drawn to this lineup is because of the different religions and regions across borders.
Mm.
Like I literally wanted to first name the documentary like Across Borders or something like that. Or like not actually, but you know what I mean? Like that was a big theme. It's like across the borders within the South Asian larger South Asian region, but also across borders in terms of like coming to America, performing at this big festival at Coachella. That's like, that's always been a theme that was there.
Yeah.
So I would say, I hope so. I don't know, like, how do you change the minds of people who are so strict in what they believe? And I think that the future is in, yeah, like affecting change across generations. But I'm saying like, it's really important to me that younger generations grow up thinking, critically thinking, and like acknowledging like humanity over anything else.
Mm.
So it's like one of those things where I'm like, I'm not a doctor. I don't know how to save lives. I'm not a politician. But what I know is what has impacted me, which is media, music, entertainment. That's what's impacted me on every level. So I feel like that's how I want to impact other people. Mm-hmm. And I believe in that impact, you know? So I hope so. But I hope, again, like this is just a starting point to like go deeper and deeper into all of those themes and stuff.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's such a powerful medium and so much more powerful than we even realize, because I feel like me growing up watching the kind of shows and films that I grew up watching, and very similar to you, you know, like there was a part of me that loved Bollywood and Hindi films and Desi and Star Plus and everything. Mm-hmm. And then there was another part of me that watched Gossip Girl and watched like yep. Friends and all yeah. of this.
Yeah, I watched Skins too, by
Skins?
The way.
Skins? Basically British. I didn't watch Skins because I didn't grow up in the UK. But
oh, I yeah. like I like watched it secretly on my laptop, which is like very scandalous.
Yeah. But it shapes the way we think, and it shapes our identities because it shapes how we perceive the world.
Exactly. Yeah.
And a lot of like the unlearning and things that we're doing now, it's a lot of like everything we've consumed as kids now we're sort of like reshaping, right? Mm-hmm, and so you mm-hmm. are in a position now to shape what that looks like for the younger generations, for the kids growing up now, you know, who will be like, oh my God, let me go on Coachella's YouTube. And oh, there's a documentary about yeah. Diljit and like all of these other artists. And how cool, I think that's just, I'm jealous of those kids because I wish I had that. Mm. But at the same time, I think because we didn't have that, it creates that drive and that fire, right? To talk about those things and celebrate those things even more.
I agree. Yeah. And I think we have obviously done a lot of reflecting on why we felt a certain way growing yeah. up. And
a bit too much reflecting. But
I say that so much actually that I'm like done reflecting. I've done too much reflecting, especially over the pandemic. I did like way too much reflecting. But then that's also why I switched out of marketing, applied to my program, like so much changed in my life. But yeah, I mean, I'm jealous of those kids too. But it's like even seeing my brother, who's 20 years old, he's yeah. much younger than me. He also, by the way, is an incredible singer and performer. And he was like a child prodigy. And honestly, like he is in the back of my mind, even when I made this documentary, was like,
wow.
was like, I just felt so sad. And I feel like he's not even sad. So I'm like wasting myself. But like he's still so young, but I'm saying like, he has so much potential and he had so much potential as a kid, but it was like, what is a little brown boy, you know, who loves to sing and dance? How is he going to make it? He knows no one. And that made me really sad, where I was like, I dream of a world where a kid who has a talent and a passion can go take that to whatever level that's possible.
Mm.
And like that is a huge, like I wanted to be a pop star, but that was more of like, you know, I want to be a pop star. But truly it was like seeing potential in like my little brother is like, I wished, I still dream of that for him. I'm like his like stage sister. But like kids like him, it's like I want them to feel like they can do what, like whatever they want to do is possible.
Yeah.
That's a big part of the documentary too. I actually never even said that at all, which is like the fact that you can go be on stages like that and you can make it as an artist and you can also make whatever kind of music you want to make. Like you don't have to like fit this formula just because you're South Asian. You can do whatever you want. And you can highlight your culture and identity in however way you want, you know? But yeah, I forget what you asked. What did you even ask? I just like started talking about my brother.
That the world is shaping itself to accept.
Yes. I remember what I was going to say.
Those kids. Yeah. Right? Some of us just didn't feel like the world was designed for us to shine. And and the thing is like, there's a stepping stone, which we're at now, which is, okay, we're here, we're Desi. Okay, let's shout about how Desi we are. Okay, but like that's not what it's about either, because we all have crafts and creative outlets that we want to be able to express, which is why I think Joy's quote really stood out to me, which was, you know, it's not about being overtly Desi or brown or shouting about that. It's about just being and being allowed to be.
Yes.
So actually, my question to you was going to be, from being a passenger to becoming a pilot, is the future of representation-oriented filmmaking to not have to talk about representation in filmmaking at all, because it won't be something we're deprived of?
It's so hard because, like you said, we shouldn't have to shout about being Desi. On the flip side, I've also seen people who are like, too scared to be boxed in into like the Desi narrative, that they kind of shun the community and the culture. And so I'm like, there's a healthy middle ground. And that's what also we were trying to do with the doc, which is like, let's celebrate how individual we are and how unique we are from one another. And yeah, like they all like different languages, different backgrounds, different regions, different genres. But at the same time, let's still celebrate the fact that we are connected as a part of this community, and that we are impacting people within our community, whether or not we think we are. You know, like I think it's hard because when you're making art and you're a public figure and you're making film, you are making what you want to make, but you obviously have an audience and a platform. And like people do watch and resonate with stories and people that they feel seen by and connected to. And I don't think that's a bad thing, but I think it's going to evolve. I don't think it's going to be like South Asian representation, South Asian representation. I also don't really like the term excellence, by the way. Like I feel like I understand why it's been important to celebrate excellence within certain communities, but I also just want to like celebrate community in general and like people who are not quote unquote excellent yet. Like Jay Wolf actually said this in his interview with us, and we didn't include it because we didn't have time, but it was like, let's, the future of music and representation and like diversity is celebrating people who are like performing in backyards and also performing in stadiums. And as South Asian parents, letting your kids go buy tickets to go watch shows and like, you know what I mean? Just experiencing the whole breadth and diversity of like the levels that people are at. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And their individuality as
well. And their individuality, of course. So I think that it's hard to say, because I think representation is always going to be a topic, even if it's not South Asian representation, even if it's like, oh, I represent representation in this specific, like Joy represents something very specific. Diljit represents something very specific. But I think that we should move, that we will probably move away from like overarching, just like throwing around the word South Asian representation for anything. Like, it's like, what does that mean on a deeper level? What are they representing? I also feel like I talk to kids sometimes who are like, they want to be South Asian representation. But it's like, what does that mean? What does that mean? So I think it's kind of just like thinking more about like, what are you representing? You're not just representing South Asians. Like, what are you representing? What are you trying to say? What are you trying to tell people? What are you trying to showcase? So I think it's more so just like expanding how we talk about representation.
Mm.
But I don't think it's not talking about it at all.
Mm.
Because I don't believe in that either. Like, I don't believe in, like, I know this isn't the same, but I hate, like, the term colorblind.
Oh, yeah.
I hate any, like, I don't think we can ever ignore.
Mm.
I personally don't like a South Asian character being cast for something and then nothing being changed about the script to accommodate for the fact that that character's South Asian. That doesn't mean their identity needs to be the focal point.
Yeah.
And people keep saying that. They're like, oh, well, their identity should be. I'm like, that's fine. It's not the focal point.
Mm.
But, like, the words that they use at home, or like the food that you see that they're eating on their dinner table, or like the what they call their mom, or like the music they're playing in their car. It's the little nuances that help people feel seen.
Hmm.
But it's not like the focal point of every story should be like, let's talk about representation. Let's talk about identity. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's the middle ground, isn't it? I think that's the key. Because we often find ourselves going from one extreme to the other these days. And I do agree with you in that, like, there is so much nuance in how we individually are desi in our own ways.
Yeah.
And some people actually just aren't very desi, like, because they've just been, you know, 3-4 generations removed away.
That's fine, yeah.
That's fine too, because that's a story worth telling as well.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure people will identify with that. But yeah, I think it's a very interesting topic we could talk about for so long, isn't it? Like, how you dissect it and what it means to be desi. Because even for me, like, I have the word brown in my podcast, and I have actually for a very long time not loved that about it, because yes, you know, it's about talking and celebrating about you know, celebrating our achievements and the cool things we're all doing as a community, but it's so broad and it's such a, you know, it just feels like one of those tick box, like, diversity quotas being fulfilled. Like, oh, you're brown. Like, what does that mean? So it maybe it's because the reason I asked you is because I'm going through something internally of trying to figure out, like, what my narrative is or how I want to put this platform forward, for example. But yeah.
So. No, that's a fair question. I think about that too, where like, people ask me, do you only want to work on South Asian stuff? Mm. Are you just like, do you want to be like, yeah, do you want to only be working with South Asian stories and people? And I'm like, well, obviously I want to tell stories that impact, you know, people from my community and the larger community. But like, no, I think like I'm also starting to think about how to talk about what I'm drawn to, which is more so culture driven.
Mm.
Culture can be like actual, like ethnically related culture, but it can also be like the culture of experiencing dance, the culture of experiencing food, or like
pop culture,
music, pop culture, like just culture in general, you know, and community in general. And community is also created and cultivated in so many different ways. And yeah, not only South Asian stories. And also, what is a South Asian story? Right?
Such a range.
Right? Like, it could be like, I'm like working on a project right now that is like multi-generational South Asian family, but it's not a South Asian story. It's a story.
Mm.
And there's like a larger backdrop around it behind like the world and specifically like climate, but the characters that are centered are South Asian and it's in their world.
Mm.
Maybe like it's in their world, but it's not a South Asian story. So it's hard. Yeah, it's like something I'm still figuring out.
Yeah, I think we all are.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that we're talking about it now, because I do feel like that shift is happening in people's minds right now of like, well, what does that actually mean in like wider pop culture? Because yes, we see more desis, you know, on big platforms now, but are they necessarily being shown in the right light, you know?
That's why I don't like the term excellent.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's like,
because people jump on that bandwagon a lot, because people are still coming on board now, you know, where they're only just talking about these things we've been speaking about for probably years now, many years.
Oh yeah.
It's interesting. It's at times frustrating as well, because you're like, oh, you're just realizing this, okay? But if you'd done a bit more research into it, you'd see that there's so much work happening already.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe I'm also somewhere along the lines where I may have frustrated somebody else because they've been around longer.
That's the thing. I mean, people are on different journeys. Like, yeah. I'm sure there's like people previous, you know, in previous generations or like people who are slightly older than us that are like rolling their eyes at us.
Yeah.
Talking. They just realize this. We've been fighting this battle. That's why like I want to really acknowledge like there are people who've been fighting the battle before, you know, and like we will do it for the next generation. But I think there just needs to be more like open-mindedness and connectiveness across all generations and all levels. Like we all want the same thing.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah. That's very true.
And yeah, like I went through my, we all went through our self-reflections in different stages too.
Yeah.
Like I feel like I have friends who I'm seeing realize things now that I like spoke to them about a few years ago, but then also vice versa too. But it's just like people are just on different journeys.
Yeah, and having grace for that a little bit.
Having grace for sure.
Challenging when you've introspected too hard.
I know, like, oh my God, I know. I understand the feeling. I understand it.
Oh.
Oh yeah, I understand it.
Well, Meghna, I feel like we could chat for so long.
I know.
But hopefully we'll have you back when you're, I don't know, when you release your next piece of work, about that maybe.
Yes.
It was so great to have you here today. And thank you so much for sharing all of your thoughts and being so candid. Because yeah. I think it's really appreciated. I can tell that you've, you know, been through that process yourself of figuring out what it is you want to do. And I think people
lots
will
of
resonate.
Reflection.
Yeah, 100%. We're the generation of reflection, aren't
I
we?
I guess so, yeah.
My last question to you is, what do you have strong game in?
I have strong game in telling stories and connecting with people in various ways, yeah.
And you're doing it so well. I feel like this is just the tip of the iceberg. There's so much to come from you. So I'm excited. I hope more people get to know about your work as well.
Thank you.
And also go watch the documentary because you're going to cry.
Yes, please go watch it. Thank you so much for having me. This is so lovely to be here in London and like having this conversation with you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Brown Game Strong. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like to stick around, then please do hit the subscribe button if you're listening on YouTube. And do give the social links a follow as well. We're on Instagram and on TikTok. If you have any thoughts, feedback, advice, any potential guests that you'd like to hear me speak to, then please do drop a note on either the socials or on browngamestrong@gmail.com. Thank you once again for listening and really appreciate your support.